Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans. 30% of Americans who are planning home improvements of $5,000 or more will pay for those renovations with a high-interest credit card. That may not be a great idea. A better idea may be to take cash out of your home with a Quicken Loans 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. The rate today on our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 4.375%. APR, 4.65%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate subject to change. Pay 2.13% fee to receive this discounted rate. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Hey, it's Happily Ever After, the show where we revisit some of the fairy tales that we fell in love with once upon a time. Now, if we think about fairy tales, whether from the East or the West, they all have some element of magic weaved through it. It could be an enchanted castle, a talking clock, an evil witch. The fairy tale kingdom is this realm that is just filled to the brim with all things magical. And when we look at magic in a larger context, I would say that, you know, there are some people who believe in it, while on the other side of the spectrum, there are going to be those who would just roll their eyes at such childish notions. So, is magic just kiddie nonsense that we outgrow, or is there something more to the pull that magic has and the way that we as human beings relate to it? I'm Tasha Fussell, and in the final episode of this series, we are going to be entertaining those kinds of questions with this lovely lady.
Hello, my name's Marion Gibson, and I'm a professor of Renaissance and Magical Literature at Exeter University in the UK.
So we're going to start by taking a look at the history of magic to get a bird's eye view of how it began and evolved over time. Magic, of course, exists in all cultures, and so the definitions of it would probably vary, but here's Marion with her description of it.
Yeah, history of magic is a history of the whole world, isn't it? It's a huge subject. But I think that some of the things that tie magical ideas together across the world are the idea of possibility, that anything is possible with magic. Magic transcends the material. It moves beyond anything that is possible in your normal life. And magic helps you attain your desires. And often within that, there are some ideas globally about how magic is achieved. So it's usually associated with words in one way or another, or with objects and manipulating objects in particular special ways. And sometimes going along with that, there's an idea of ritual that draws all of those things together. So it's sometimes quite ordinary things, but performed in a special way and which has an effect which transforms everything, which makes the impossible possible, if you like.
If you look at the word magic itself, does it have a particular meaning? What exactly are its roots?
It does. Magic has a number of different origins, but the word itself comes from the Greek word mage, which is a male magician, a male practicer of magic. And the Greeks have this idea that the Persians, i.e. the Iranians, with whom they were fighting at the time, this is, you know, during the time of ancient Grecian civilization, they had the idea that they were using magic against them. So the Persians are bad, magical people, and had to be labeled as such. So magic is about that kind of definition, that kind of derivation. Magic is what other people do quite often. And that gives it a sense that magic might be a bad thing, might be a dangerous thing. If you're not doing it, you know, what you're doing is reasonable and is based on wisdom and learning and democracy and all those kind of good things. But what the people over there are doing is magic, and that might be dangerous to you.
And so when magic was first being practiced, was it always related to the idea of the supernatural? You know, would you put it in the same category as things like ghosts and monsters and fairies?
Yeah, I think so. I think people always have the idea that there's something special about magic. So even if they had no understanding of modern science, and obviously that was the way all cultures started, they have the idea that magic was special and different, and it was connected with religion in various ways. One of the interesting things that happens in modern culture is that magic and religion and science go off in different directions. But in the past, you know, prehistoric times and coming on right into the Middle Ages, they were still heavily interconnected.
So magic, science and religion were all sort of jumbled up together.
Yes, that's right, yes. And it was difficult to say which was which. So if you lived in Shakespeare's England, for example, it was actually quite difficult to say why things happened. For example, medical things, it was difficult to say why somebody'd become ill. It might be because they had some condition in their body that made them ill, which is what we would think now on the whole. Or it might be that a witch had sent a devil into them. Or it might be that the fairies had been getting at them. So the sense that magic was different from science, was different from medicine, for example, was very blurry indeed.
You mentioned before about how magic has kind of this negative connotation to it, right? It can have that negative sort of association. And I suppose if you were to chart the course of magic over the centuries, that line would just be going up and down and up and down in terms of how people perceive it, like whether it goes on the decline or it gets revived and sort of seen in a positive light. Would that be the case?
Yes, it would. Yes, I think it would. So if you look, going back to Shakespeare's England, because that's a period I'm just particularly interested in, and it's also the period when fairy tales are developing and being written down throughout the 16th or 18th centuries, if you like, that's the period when there was a lot of persecution of witches. So magic has become very negatively associated in that time. But coming into modernity, you know, you often find in today's world people self-identify as witches. They self-identify as practitioners of magic. And obviously in other cultures than the Western culture, this has always been the case. So depending on where you are in the world, you can have upsurges in persecution of magical people. And then that will fall away and everything will go back to where it was, really. And in some cultures, people who say that they work magic or believe that they work magic have always been respected. So it's very geographically specific, but you're absolutely right. There's this chronology of peaks and troughs of negative and positive ideas of magic.
Right. So it may have started off as a good thing, you know. Was it good because it was used as sort of a healing tool?
Yes, that's right. That's absolutely right. So if you feel that you've been afflicted by something, you're ill or something has gone wrong in your life, you might go to a person who says that they can work magic to fix this. So healing the body, making your life better, bringing you good luck, perhaps giving you a charm or a spell to say to make things better in your life. So early on, there were a lot of ideas that magic was positive.
And that's so funny because that still exists today in certain cultures, right?
Yes.
That strong belief in practicing black magic, or that you're somehow controlling a situation or a person using a supernatural force, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in Indonesia, for example, in the 1990s, there were mass witch hunts. A lot of people were killed by mob violence as witches. So you can find this all across the globe. And even in Western Europe and in America, you will still every now and again find somebody who's been attacked because somebody thinks that they're a witch. So I don't think that belief ever really goes away. I think it's stronger in some societies at some times than it is in others, and then it gets weaker and so on. It goes in that pattern that we talked about. But I think it's a basic human thing to think that there might be forces in the world that we don't understand, and to be frightened of them, and to think that other people might be in control of them, especially, of course, people that you don't like.
When we look at sort of post-1800s, you know, going to the 1900s, my mind immediately goes to magic as an illusion, used as a form of entertainment in that time frame. Was there any sort of relation in that? Because I suppose if you look at magic as, you know, the tricks and the magicians that do the tricks, I mean, you know that it's illusion. There's a distinction for sure.
Yes, you'll find, even going back to the period of the witch hunt, some people who didn't believe in witchcraft were arguing that actually this is just sleight of hand. These are conjuring tricks. You know, they're not calling up devils. They're actually just hiding things in their hands or producing things out of cupboards. So right from the very start of a discussion of what magic was, people thought it might be an illusion. It might be just a bit of trickery that one human being was practicing on another. And of course, by the time you've got to the 19th century, in Europe at least, the Witchcraft Act, the Act of Parliament designed to help people prosecute witches, they've all been repealed, so they're all gone. And people see magic as once they might have done before, as just something which is entertaining. You know, it's not to do with the devil, it's not threatening. It's just something that people do because they're cleverer than you, actually, and they can fool your eye or ear into seeing that something is there that isn't there, really.
So does that mean it sort of got demystified?
Yes, I think it did. Yes, I think that's right. That would be a good word for it.
And I mean, and if we look at it today, 2017, I would say that even though, you know, we might not outwardly proclaim or admit to be believers of magic, it's everywhere. I mean, like it's in all the superhero films, for example.
Yes, it is. Yeah, superheroes are magicians in a sense. And obviously the Harry Potter phenomenon, the worldwide phenomenon, brings that together. So the people that we admire as heroes, you know, the protagonists of our our great stories of our cultures, these are quite often magical people.
Magic appears in quite a few different genres of literature, but is the kind of magic that you encounter in fairy tales any different? We'll find out with Marian Gibson when we come back. It's Happily Ever After on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during Red, White, and Blue Savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
It's the Evening Edition with me, Tasha Fusil, along with my guest, Marian Gibson, a professor of Renaissance and Magical Literature at Exeter University. Marian's research looks at the relationships between writings about magic and how it relates to us and our identity in today's times. So the topic for the night is magic, but before we go on to hear about how magic features in fairy tales, let's first find out how Marian got interested in magic and how that led to her pursuing it academically.
Well, I got interested in magic at university. It's actually the university that I still teach at, Exeter University. I was here as an undergraduate student, and I noticed that there was a module in the third year that I could choose called Renaissance Magic. And I just got really fascinated by reading some of the original trial accounts from the early modern period, from Shakespeare's time, of people who'd been accused of witchcraft. And I didn't believe in magic, and I still don't. I still think there are other explanations for things that happen in the world. But I was really interested that these people were being accused of harming their neighbours, of ruining crops, of killing children, things like that. And some of them were confessing to it as well. So some of them were saying, you know what, I am a magician. I am a witch. I have done these things to my neighbours. And it interested me because I'm interested in why people tell stories about things, basically. It interested me why they were telling those stories, why their neighbours were telling stories about them, and why then they were then saying, yeah, you know, yes, I am a magical person. And I've been asking myself that question ever since, really.
With all these years of studying, all these books that you've written, is there any sort of conclusion or any sort of answer that you've arrived at?
Yeah, why are they doing it? Well, there are lots of different answers. I suppose I don't think there is one answer. I think you can look at different people. Everybody's motivation is different. You can look at different cultures. You can look at different religious cultures and different reasons why people might tell stories. I think some of the accusations are to do with people who are just projecting outwards their own fears and their own angst and their own unhappiness. I mean, I imagine you can recognise this even in society today. It's very easy to find somebody to scapegoat. But I think some of the people who are confessing really did believe that they could do magic. And they felt empowered by it in various ways. Quite often they're people who are materially quite poor. So they're quite disenfranchised by their own society. A lot of them are women, so they don't really have a voice in their own culture. And maybe claiming that they can do magic is a way in which they could earn money, they could get people to do what they wanted. Those are some of the explanations that I've looked at and thought about. But still sometimes I feel I don't know. And I think that's part of the fascination of reading about magic, that you can never pin it down, whether you believe it's real or not. You don't know how it works, you don't know why people claim to be able to do it. You don't know why there's this human need to tell stories about magic. And I think that's what brings people back to it over and over again, actually.
You mentioned that it was empowering for these people to say that they were practitioners of magic. Is that how magic made its way into fairy tales? You know, were the people who were telling these stories of fairy tales feeling empowered by giving these characters magical abilities?
Yeah, I think magic makes people feel empowered, yes. I think that's one of the things that makes it fascinating. So if you can claim that you can do magic yourself, then that makes you feel better, actually. Whether you believe it or not, it gives you power with other people, too. And I think that people got excited telling stories about this kind of possibility. Wouldn't it be great if we could transform the world and build ourselves a fantastic new castle out of nowhere. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could go to the ball like Cinderella and we could have a wonderful time and we could be a princess? So magic lets you imagine those kind of things.
And while they were collecting these fairy tales, was there a strong belief in some of these ideas? I mean, of course, not the fact that there was a fairy godmother that could grant you special things or anything like that, but was that belief in magic strong enough that it wasn't out of the norm to come across magic in a story?
I think, yes. I think it's at the moment when people start doubting magic that they start writing down fairy tales. So I think there's a really interesting moment in the 16th to 18th century European culture where people have stopped believing in magic in real life, in large part. Other sections of the populace may well believe in magic, but those people who are literate, are likely to be interested in folklore, they now think, oh, this is a bit nostalgic, this is a bit backward-looking. I believed in fairies when I was a child, I believed in witches when I was a child, but now I don't. But here's this interesting story that's still about them. Why don't I record it? This is clearly something worthy of attention. So I think the tales come out of a society that believes in magic and they're told then, but they're collected and written down and brought into literary culture, if you like, at the moment when they start to lose that sense that everybody believes in magic. When they become something a bit different, a bit special, they get recorded then, I think.
When you feel like you're losing it, almost.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, when you feel like this belongs to the past and you ought to preserve it, you ought to record it because you enjoyed it, because there was something in it that appealed to you, but you feel it's special and it should be written down. It's not an ordinary day thing.
So, Marion, you would have studied and read about how magic is written in all manners of literature. Is there anything unique about how magic is used in a fairy tale?
Magic in fairy tales tends to be more empowering, I would say, than it is in a lot of other texts. Because fairy tales are quite condensed forms quite often, they're quite brief, there are quite fantastical events that happen quickly in them. I think you get more of a sense in fairy tales of magic being something where you snap your fingers and everything changes. But yes, you know, Cinderella goes to the ball, for example, because bam, a fairy godmother appears in front of her and makes everything happen for her right away, and off she goes. So I think magic feels more powerful in fairy tales than it does in some other texts.
It just exists. There's no question about it. There's no shock about it. And I'm just trying to compare it to sort of maybe something like Harry Potter, where there is that sense that is it's a secret world. Magic is still a secret power that only a select few wield. Whereas in a fairy tale, you know, the animals speak. The king and queen are often quite magical characters themselves. So it's not it's just accepted as is.
Magic just happens in fairy tales, doesn't it? So yes, it comes out of nowhere and suddenly it transforms your life. As you say, in stories like the Harry Potter stories, there's a transition, isn't there? So we start off in the muggle world and the non-magical world with Harry living with the Dursleys and having a rotten time. And it takes a little while for us to get into the magical world. You know, we have to see that magical creatures are beginning to appear in his world, that strange things are happening, and then off he goes to Hogwarts. He has to literally go on a journey to get to the magical place. Whereas in fairy tales, you're absolutely right, magic just erupts into the everyday world as if it had always been there, and we accept it as such.
Is there a reason why it's sort of told in that way, or is that just sort of a feature of a fairy tale?
It is a feature of a fairy tale, but I think it goes back to the fact that these are very old stories, and they go back to the fact that the stories come from a world where people believed in magic as a matter of course.
Objects, you know, magic is always infused into objects for some, you know, there's always an enchanted, an amulet or something like that. What can you tell me about that?
You need a place to keep magic. So you can keep it in words, or you can keep it in objects, or you can keep it in some kind of special room or place that's set apart. It's always seemed to me that magic is such a powerful thing that you have to contain it in something. And sometimes that can be something like an amulet or a stone or a shell or a wand, a twig, something from the natural world maybe, or something from human culture. Magic needs to have a home, and often you want to hide it away as well. So So quite often magical objects are small things. They can be hidden easily. And that's one of the things that makes them powerful and also maybe makes them frightening. So, you know, if you come across something that's been hidden away in your home and you don't know what it is, you might think, what's that? Somebody's put that there, some kind of talisman or something. Ooh, are they hurting me through this object? So it helps if they're small, and it helps if they're quite concrete little things. And maybe you can exchange them as well. Maybe you can give them away to other people. You know, you can traffic in them, because sometimes magic sells as well. And it really helps if you can have something which you can say is magical, and people can buy it and take it away with them. So a magical object is a really powerful thing.
It just occurred to me, like, magic, it happens in the background, right, in the fairy tales. We don't really fight over it, even though it's such a powerful thing. As you said, it can transform whatever situation you're in an instant. But, yeah, there's no fight for it, for example, like in Lord of the Rings.
No, that's right. And it's that sense that magic is taken for granted, isn't it? You don't have to go on a quest to discover it necessarily.
Yeah.
It's already right there with you.
When we come back, Marian talks to us about how magic and modern thinking may or may not go hand in hand in today's times. It's the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Break from mediocrity. BFM 89.9.
Hello again, it's Happily Ever After here on the Evening Edition. I'm Tasha, and I've got Marian Gibson with me. She's a professor of Renaissance and Magical Literature at Exeter University in the UK. We've been talking about magic and fairy tales, and I think it's probably the most important element of the story. You know, it exists so prominently that you have no choice but to completely suspend belief. And it's fun, it's entertaining. You get to put aside logic and reason for a bit, even though that's sometimes a little bit hard to do. But when you're young and you still believe in the power and possibility of magic, I wonder whether there was a struggle to distinguish between what's real and what's not.
Yeah, that's a very good question, because fairy tales are often associated with child readers, aren't they? So there often seem to be things that we tell to our children, children tell to each other, and so on. I think actually one of the things that fairy tales do is help the child to go on that journey where they stop accepting everything in the story as real. So they stop thinking that magic is real. And instead they start to work out for themselves what it is that's real and what it is that's magical. So it's a transition, I think. Children can start to believe that magic is real at the beginning of the telling, and then after a while, by the time they've got older, maybe they've moved on to different versions of the stories or started reading new things, that by that point they started to realise there is a distinction, and they're the ones that are making that distinction between what's reasonable and realistic and what isn't, what's fantastical and can't be believed in the same way. They're a powerful teaching tool, fairy tales. They teach children all sorts of things about their daily life, about different kinds of behaviour, but also maybe about what magic is and isn't, and what reality is and isn't, and what's reasonable behaviour and what isn't, if you like.
Well, you know, I suppose we all internalise magic in completely different ways. Just thinking about sort of my immediate surroundings, there are people who, I wouldn't say believe in magic, but are definitely more superstitious than others. And I don't know whether you would classify superstition as some form of magic. But is there a way to explain why some people would believe in the inexplicable more than others?
Actually, some cognitive scientists have thought that there is a way to explain that. And it's to do with brain chemicals and changes in the brain that maybe predisposes some people more to be more magically inclined, or to believe in magic, or to be religious for that matter, to think about supernatural forces in the world and believe powerfully in them. So it has been suggested, this is fairly recent work, so nobody's quite sure how true it is, but it has been suggested that some people are just more magically disposed than others. It's not clear why, though. I mean, you know, just speculating about it is interesting, isn't it? Why would that be? Why would a particular chemical be associated with belief in magic? How do people make those decisions? We all start off by believing in magic. We're talking about children who read fairy tales. I think we all start off with the predisposition to believe what's told to us. And that might include the possibility that anything is possible. And it's kind of sad, isn't it, to think that we lose
yes.
that. As we get older, we realise everything is not possible, actually. We can try and try, but sometimes things just can't be done. It's kind of a process of making people less magical, if you like.
Yeah, and I guess saying you believe in magic, or if you're at least hopeful about the existence of magic, you kind of get judged, right? It's like saying you still believe in Santa Claus.
Oh, yeah, often people who believe in magic are seen as quite naive, aren't they?
That's the word.
And that does seem a little bit sad, doesn't it? But actually, why isn't there a space for magic in the world? Or at least the belief, the hope, perhaps, that magic is possible.
Well, we are sort of quite irrational. Like, you know, as much as we want to say that we can apply logic and science and reason to everything, at the end of the day, human beings themselves are quite irrational people, and we tend to, you know, we make cognitive mistakes or there are biases that we have. And magic, I feel, plays a lot into that as well.
I think irrationality ought to be studied more, actually, in contemporary culture. It's clearly a powerful force still, isn't it? We think that we make all our decisions reasonably, and we lay out pros and cons, and we decide what's best for ourselves and the community and so on. But when you look at political decisions, when you look at personal decisions, quite often they're made for completely different reasons, and it's very difficult to defend them rationally. They're made because somebody feels passionately about something, and they emote about something. And magic belongs in that territory, I think. Magic helps us explain why we've done things that maybe we're not terribly proud of, or maybe we just can't defend to ourselves. I don't know why I've done that. You know, it's because there are these forces in the universe that are driving me, and I must respond to them and go along with them. It's my destiny to do it. So, yeah, I think you're right that magic is part of the world of the irrational, but that's a really powerful world. It's all around us all the time. It's even if we're working in a university, say, we can quite often see irrational things going on around us and ask ourselves why that's happening.
You know, with all the work that you've done over the years, have you met a lot of people who believe in magic?
I have met a lot of people who believe in magic. Yes, people do tend to self-identify and come up to me and tell me about their magical experiences, which is always interesting. But yeah, I have. And there are lots of people who today would identify themselves as witches. There are people who go to fairy festivals. Magic's on the rise across the world, I believe. I think people are becoming more inclined to be tolerant of magical belief, to be interested in it, to experiment with it themselves.
Why is that?
I don't know, to be perfectly honest. I would have a number of speculations, I guess. It could be to do with the way that the world feels so uncontrollable sometimes, that we're overwhelmed by information, by different decisions that we have to make, by the complexity of choices that we need to make in the world about politics and ethical conduct and things that we buy and things that we invest in and so on. That's always been the case to some extent, but the more complicated the world gets and the more information that's available, it seems to me that people sometimes look for a shortcut, and maybe that shortcut is to say, I'm going to let luck decide, I'm going to let fate decide, I'm just going to go with what I feel. And that seems to me like a quite magical impulse, actually. And I also think that it goes back to that point I was making earlier about magic being empowering. It's something to do with wanting to be more empowered and wanting to feel that you can make anything happen. And we do live in a world where we're constantly told this, that you could do anything, you can change your life, but you have to work so hard for it. Wouldn't it be nice if there was a shortcut there as well? So I think maybe that sense of empowerment is something that people have latched onto in modern times. Sometimes people just want to reject science, or they want to reject some of the assumptions that go along with science about who's empowered and who isn't and how things work and all of that kind of politics about how the universe works. And I think magic helps people to resist that. Magic's quite a subversive, radical thing in some way.
Marion, you apply a very academic approach to understanding magic, but personally, how close have you ever gotten to experiencing magic for yourself?
There are sometimes coincidences and luck, I think. I do tend to get swayed by that a little bit. So you can, I mean, sometimes I'm researching, for example, you know, you can go to an archive and you can think, oh, I'll just look at that over there. It's probably nothing, but something in the catalogue. I think that might be interesting. And you find something that is just waiting for you. And you could say maybe that's Maybe that's because you're a good researcher, you read the catalogue properly. But sometimes it feels like fate. And that is something that interests me. My own impulse towards wanting to believe it makes me quite interested too. That's what makes me think that all human beings have this tendency. And I get frightened, I think, like everybody else. You know, I'm perfectly capable of walking along in a dark night thinking, oh, this is a bit spooky, isn't it? What if there are ghosts out there, you know? What if there are creatures? I'm thinking, no, no, of course not. You know, just carry on, it will be fine. These things don't exist. And so nothing has ever bothered me on that front, but it doesn't stop you imagining, does it? I think those kind of stories are also quite entertaining. It's always interesting when people tell you about things that happened to them, and you think, oh, yeah, well, that could be magic, actually. And then maybe you rationalise and you think it isn't, but you enjoy the story.
I get what you're saying with the interest and the pull. You know, you want to believe it even though you have a healthy degree of scepticism within you.
Right, wanting to believe is important, isn't it? That was one of the catchphrases of the X-Files. I want to believe. And that wanting to believe is a really powerful thing.
My thanks to Marion Gibson, Professor of Renaissance and Magical Literature at Exeter University. I'm Tasha Fasil, and this has been Happily Ever After on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during red, white, and blue savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.